Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Jennifer Law, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Welcome to Venus Rising. I'm really excited about my guest with me today. Her name is Alicia Gruber, and Alicia is a mom of two. She's a military wife, her husband serving active duty right now in the military. And Alicia is herself a surrogate, and she also runs multiple surrogacy support groups on Facebook for a surrogacy agency called Family Inceptions. Her goal is to help educate and support people who are interested in a surrogacy journey. You can also follow her on Instagram at Gruber Alicia. I'll try to remember to repeat that at the end, but if not, I'll be sure to add her Instagram handle in the bio when we release the podcast. So welcome, Alicia, to Venus Rising. Thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk today.
Yeah, I am too. Before I hit record, you know, we just got to know each other a little bit. And, you know my position on surrogacy, and I know your position on surrogacy. And the style that I've always done my work is to try to have a big tent to educate people. So our focus is always on educating women about the potential risks and harms to them and perhaps the children. But this is about you and your story and how you got into being a surrogate. I don't even know how many times you've done surrogacy. So maybe just tell our listeners a little bit about how you came to learn about surrogacy, how you decided it was right for you, and a little bit about that part of your story.
Sure. So I have a three and a four-year-old now. When we first got introduced to surrogacy, it was through a Facebook ad. So I was just trolling Facebook like normal. I had nothing to do with any agencies, or that wasn't part of my job yet. I was just a server at a restaurant, and I had two toddlers. And I saw a Facebook ad, and it said, make, you know, X amount of dollars, like $40,000 or whatever it was. I was like, I never really thought about that. My husband being active duty and me being a server, we were okay financially, making ends meet, but it wasn't quite as much as we wanted to for me to stay home enough with our children as much as I wanted. I was never the type that really wanted to put them in daycare 8-9 hours a day to work and then come home. You only have so much time with them when they're little. So I was really looking for something else that I would enjoy to do to help contribute to family finances. And obviously the money was a big perk on it for me. So I filled out the initial application. Well, actually, before I filled out the application, my husband and I talked about it for a couple months. We talked about it for like 3 months on and off. You know, like, is this something that we could do? Is it going to fit into our schedule? How's my moods when I'm pregnant? You know, that kind of thing. Am I going to be okay, you know, giving the baby back? And all those things were no-brainers for me. They were just easy. My husband had already had a vasectomy after our second child was born. So we knew that our family was going to be complete. We didn't want any more kids. And for me, I was comfortable with that fact. So the number one question I always get asked is, how do you give up the baby? In my mind, the way I feel is that it's not my baby to begin with. I'm babysitting it, but it's in my belly. I'm just taking extra great care of something that does not belong to me. So I was okay with that. So we went ahead and we filled out the short application and then got accepted and filled out the long version and then got sent profiles for matching, and we found a match and went to the medical screening and then the transfer and kind of one foot in front of the other. And then the next thing you know, we're pregnant. So no turning back there. So it kind of just went. And then we, in July of last year, we had a very healthy, beautiful little baby boy, and he went home with his parents. And the process for me was so seamless and smooth and non-drama that we said, well, let's do it again. We were able to pay off a ton of debt, and now we could start saving if we do the next one. And the relationship that we built with the parents was so much more than I expected. So we're like, let's do it again. So we applied, and surprise to us, the same people wanted another baby then. After they had the first, they're like, well, we love being parents. We really want to do another one. We are going to transfer in 3 weeks for the second baby for the same couple.
And I'm just curious because a lot of my work is international as well as here in the U.S. Do you mind, I'm not asking who they are, but are they an American couple or are they an international couple?
They're an international couple. They live in Italy. They're a little bit older couple. They didn't meet until later in life, and then they tried to have their own kids, and she wasn't able to, and then they tried to adopt, and that didn't work out for them. So by the time they, you know, saved for surrogacy, and because they're a great couple, and they work really hard, but they're not, you know, overly rich by any means. So by the time they had everything together, they're, you know, they're in their 50s, which is older for American standards, but from what I understand, it's not that uncommon in other countries, especially because they have so much family support there. You live with your families for longer and more generations are in the same house. But yeah, so they live in Italy. They speak conversational English. So we can communicate on most things. One understands more, one can speak a little better. So they kind of translate for each other.
And do you have any contact with the child at all, or pictures, or... You know,
I do.
You can't see them. You don't live in the same country.
Right. Yeah. He's one. So he's still, you know, pretty unaware, really unaware of everything. But during my journey, I made a scrapbook. So I took like belly bump pictures and all the ultrasounds and all of sentimental conversations that I'd had with his parents and that kind of stuff. And I made it into a scrapbook. And for his first birthday, I sent it to him. So his mom and his dad were going through the scrapbook and showing pictures. You know, he's still little. So I would assume, or I would like to hope that when he's older, he'll appreciate it and kind of know where he came from. And it's a donor egg and the dad's sperm. And really, he looks just like his dad. It's so funny.
I was going to ask, because of her age, she probably had the donor egg.
Yep, she did. And so she calls me his second mom, and his first mom is the donor. They use the same donor for the second transfer. Then there's me who gave birth, and then them. So we exchange pictures about once a month on like his month birthday. And during the first journey, we Skyped every week to kind of check in and talk and stuff. So yeah, we do have contact.
So here's a question I have, and this is my nurse brain, because, you know, I follow the medical literature as it relates to health risks of pregnancy and surrogacy, and in particular, the gestational surrogate. We've had some important studies come out in the medical literature in the last couple of years, fertility and sterility and OBGYN kind of a journal. And what we're seeing is that surrogate mothers have these higher rates of preeclampsia and eclampsia, gestational diabetes, maternal hypertension, because she's pregnant with a foreign embryo. So think like organ transplant, you know, you have to match the organ and the donor so they don't reject. And so he's in pregnancy that there's higher incidence of that. Is that concerning at all to you, that you are taking above just natural risks of pregnancy because you're a young mom, you know, one and two children? What do you think about that?
I mean, there's always a cause for concern or a risk for anything that you do. I mean, you know, I'm not comparing it to driving a car, but, you know, like anything like that and any medical procedure, getting your tonsils removed or, you know, my husband just had a colonoscopy, any risks can be associated with that. I really never thought about above and beyond risks because I've always had such healthy pregnancies and this one was such a healthy pregnancy, but I'm 34. So people always ask me, are you going to do it again? Are you going to do it again? And it really depends on each pregnancy. If there were something like preeclampsia or I had to have a C-section or, you know, anything, just I've never even had gestational diabetes. I've been very lucky. That would definitely put a stop. You know, I wouldn't do it again after that just because of the risk that I know that now I'm getting in and my own children. You know, the biggest thing is I don't want them to be without a mother. I mean, I'm doing this for them. So it would kind of negate that fact. So in my mind, I never really thought about the differences between being pregnant with someone else's baby and with my own baby. It was just kind of being pregnant. It's definitely something I think about more as I get older and we do see more of it.
Would you be willing to carry twins for this couple or triplets, or if they transferred two embryos and one split and you found yourself with triplets, how would you navigate that? Because that again will just add more risk because of the multiple factor.
Absolutely. And that is a much bigger risk. And I think The first transfer, I said I would do a double embryo transfer, a DET, and my IPs only wanted one. They only want one this time, and they don't carry NICU insurance, so they can't do a double embryo. I was thinking about that actually a couple of days ago. I don't know what would happen if it split. I think they'd have to just purchase the insurance. But with my age and my children being the age that they are, where I want to be more active and I need to be, I would probably not do a double for anyone going forward, just because of risks.
And if it's split, would you be okay with reducing, or would that be something that you would struggle with as far as an ethical, moral kind of choice?
It would be something that I would struggle a little bit with, but I firmly believe that because this is not my baby, it's not my choice. So if they, you know, if that's the choice that they're making and that's the right choice for their family, then I'm not one to decide, you know, what they can handle. I would never want to put my feelings onto someone else when I don't have to live with the results. I have to live with the fact that, you know, we had to maybe terminate one of the babies. And that's something that I knew going into this. We talked about it, my husband and I did, and we talked with our agency, and that is a decision that we made. So we would have to stick with that. I wouldn't want to put on my IPs to say, no, you have to have two babies when they can't handle two babies. You know, that's not a good life for a child.
It's interesting, that tension of not my baby, not my choice. And then women say, it's my body, it's my choice. So there's yes. that tension, because it is your body that you're putting yes. at risk.
Absolutely.
But then I guess the nurse in me wants to say something just about the payment and the assuming, yes, everything we do is risk. You know, we leave our house, we take risks. We get in the car and drive, we take risks. We get in an airplane. But, you know, as a nurse, I worked, you know, for 20 years and we never paid people to take risks.
Right.
With their health. Yeah. So there's this tension again of just the fact that people are going to take that risk because they need the money, or they, you know, or the money is a benefit. So that's the sort of a tension that you and I would probably could have a long discussion over a cup of coffee or a bottle of wine.
Yes, I'll take the bottle of wine. Yeah, it's definitely, I got two more weeks. And it's definitely, a very personal choice and a feeling, and where that comes from is forever ago and how you feel about it. So, and I'm all about my body, my choice for sure. Like, I'll decide what I eat and my pain meds and, you know, how I exercise and those kind of things, as long as it doesn't harm the baby. You know, I'm not drink alcohol and eat raw steak, but yeah, for sure. It's a very thin gray line between what is happening to you and how other people are making the decisions for you as well.
Yeah. You know, we've had quite a few surrogacy deaths, sadly, in the United States, deaths that I've reported on. And one most recently was a woman in San Diego, Michelle Reeves, and she was doing the second surrogacy for the same IPs that were ready for the sibling and came back. And it was tragic that she died of a, you know, pregnancy-related complication, and, you know, her husband is without his wife and her little children, or without their mom. It's tragic. I mean, how do you reconcile that? Because now you've moved into, not only you are a surrogate, you're getting ready to do your next one, you also work for the surrogacy industry with Family Inceptions. I mean, how do you navigate recruiting women to become surrogates, knowing that you're recruiting them to take risks that might cost them their life?
I'd like to try and do it by educating, by saying, you know, like, by not, I don't want to hide anything. I don't want to say pregnancy is not rainbows and butterflies. It is not. It is not just a beautiful baby belly and kicks at, you know, 9 months. It's so much more than that. It's so much crappier than that. It really is. So I want, and anyone who is a surrogate, especially through an agency, has to have already had their own child. So we have records from their OBs, and we can have, you know, red flags and things that we look for and say, you had preeclampsia before, this will or will not work. You had gestational diabetes. Your BMI is X. So there are things that we can look for, but I really try and educate them and say, I mean, not even just preach at them, but just talk to them and say, have you thought about this? Have you talked to your husband? What will happen if, you know, where, what, how do your kids feel? Are your kids old enough to understand? So, and so I really like to try and just talk to them and have the conversation so that they're aware that there are risks and that things can happen. They don't often do. I mean, more likely is that the surrogacy will end in a good pregnancy than not, from the statistics standpoint, but it's definitely possible.
Mm-hmm. How do you explain to me, I guess, the use of the word journey? I always find that's odd. Women, surrogates never say they're pregnant. They're on a journey. That sounds a little rainbow and butterfly to me.
It does.
You're not pregnant. You're on a journey.
Yes. So the difference is, I mean, you are pregnant, but you're on a journey with someone else. You're on a journey with an agency, with a doctor, with another family. You're on a journey to make a family. So in my mind, a journey has a start and an end point. If we talk about pregnant and being in a pregnancy, that doesn't specify an end time to me. Like when I'm pregnant with my kids, then you know what, that's it. 18, 25, 39, whatever. That's still my journey. I'm still with them. But in a surrogacy journey, you are potentially done when you give birth. I mean, there, you can still have contact after the delivery and that, but you're not responsible for anything anymore. So my responsibility is from when we sign up and we match until, you know, I'm 6 months postpartum and I'm done pumping for them or whatever it is, whatever the contract you agree to. That's kind of where my mind is for the journey. I don't know where it started though. That's a really good question.
Yeah. And I'm just curious if it has something to do with the whole maternal child bonding, which as a pediatric nurse, you know, that's a really important thing. We always encourage and support and want babies and moms to bond even before the babies are born. Because I always say there's one thing a newborn baby knows when they're born, and you don't have to teach them. They know their mother. And, you know, I use the analogy that is not mine, but sort of like when we got our new puppy, we couldn't take our puppy from its mother for 8 weeks because in California it's seen as inhumane and animal cruelty. But we separate newborn babies immediately from you or their birth mother, their surrogate mom. I call you a birth mother.
Yes, that's okay.
Not for you, that baby would not be born.
Yeah.
And you gave birth to them.
Yes.
So do you think some of that use of journey is to sort of help surrogates not bond? I mean, that doesn't help the baby.
Separate the attachment, you mean?
Yeah.
You know, it could. It could be. I mean, yes, because, you know, again, that's the end point. So it doesn't signify the continuation of the relationship. So that's a very valid way to look at it, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And absolutely. And I mean, that's definitely true. You know, babies know their mom right away, their voice and their movements and, you know, everything, like from when they're awake to when they're sleeping is their sleep pattern when they're born. I worked at night a lot when my kids were in my belly and they were up, or they slept more at night when they were born because they've been rocked to sleep while I was working all night. That's definitely for real. We try to, my IPs would send voice recordings, and so we would play that. I mean, it's definitely not me singing in the car every day that the baby hears instead of the voice recordings. But yeah, there are ways we try and help with that, because that's a real thing too.
So I told you before we started recording that, you know, my son is in the military and you're a military wife. I'm a military mama and you're a military wife. I've seen, you know, quite a bit in the news about military wives sort of maybe being a high percentage of surrogate moms. You know, they fit the profile. You know, like you say, they've already had their children, they're young, they tend to be healthy, they tend to, you know, could use the extra money. Maybe their husbands are deployed and they think this is a great way for me to make some extra money while he's off serving. But is that an accurate assessment of, you know, kind of the profile and why perhaps maybe military women wives are more inclined to be surrogates?
Yes, definitely is. So at Family Inceptions, we're really trying to distinguish ourselves into being like the Premier Male Spouse Surrogacy Agency. We really want to build up our military wives, not clientele, but surrogates, because of those things. Plus, there are so many characteristics I find in my military community of wives that transition well into being a surrogate. Independence is a huge one. Being able to kind of do things on your own and take charge and be responsible for appointments. And there's so much more that's involved in a surrogacy journey or pregnancy than, now I'm thinking about it, than just your regular pregnancy. You have many more appointments. You have more communication. You have to do more paperwork. And a lot of that stuff comes naturally to military spouses because they're used to doing a lot of things on their own, from their husbands being deployed to, you know, just having crazy different schedules.
I've also heard too, because the military family often has to pick up and move, and employment is hard, because when you come into a new town, maybe there's not a lot of jobs available because people won't hire you knowing that you're not going to be there for long.
Yes, absolutely. That's 100% true. That's another big one, is that because we jump around so often, every 2 to 4 years, in a lot of cases, it's easy to commit to a year long job, if you will, to be able, and it can take longer than a year for sure, a surrogacy journey can, but to be able to have that extra income for that short specified amount of time is a big deal. So that's definitely a thing.
And what about TRICARE? One of the questions I'm often asked is are the U.S. taxpayers paying for the insurance?
Absolutely not. Nope. TRICARE does not cover any surrogacy-related things. It does count as secondary if the issue was with the mom or the birth mother. So if something happened after I gave birth, then my surrogacy's insurance that my IPs purchase is first, and then TRICARE could cover some things additionally after, but it's very rare that they actually do. So the taxpayers aren't paying any of the insurance. TRICARE won't cover anything surrogacy related during the pregnancy.
But does that, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. What if the surrogate, military wife surrogate, doesn't disclose it's a surrogate pregnancy, or because maybe the IP say, well, we don't have the money, we're really scrimping to do this, we can't provide insurance for you. I mean, you're not asked when you go to the doctors, is this your husband's baby or is this somebody else?
Right.
You slap your doctor.
Then you're committing insurance fraud and you're going to go to jail. So hopefully they don't do that. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that insurance would find out, I think. I mean, I don't know how I would hide it, because the IPs want to be in the birth room. How are you going to explain that to your doctors who are submitting your records to TRICARE? And you have more appointments. So if you say, I want a 6, 8, and a 10-week ultrasound, your doctor is going to say, no. We cover a 10-week ultrasound, and that's what you're going to get. But yeah, hopefully they don't do that, because no one wants to go to jail. And then you're going to deal with the backlash on the military, because now your spouse committed a felony.
Okay, well, that's a good answer that I can use when I'm asked that question. Tell me, what is your actual job at Family Inceptions? You have a title or...
I do. Yep. So I'm a community manager. It was after I did my first surrogacy journey, I took a course to be a virtual assistant. It was just another way I could stay home with my kids and do more work, be able to contribute to the household income. And so I started actually on Instagram, which is so weird because I'm not a huge social media person. I don't love my own social media, but Instagram has been crazy awesome for networking and meeting new people, surrogates, and other working women, other military spouses. So I took the course and I started to work for just a couple different, it was actually a person who did social media for an adoption agency, and it was a military adoption agency, and they just did their social media. So I just started to work through her, and then I kind of just kept meeting new people, and then a military or a surrogacy agency started to follow me. So I document my own journey on my Instagram, and I sent him a message. I said, hey, you know, I'm a virtual assistant. I'd love to help you out with anything you have. This is a cause I really believe in. And they are like, oh my gosh, we're looking for someone. And so I've kind of just been working them. It's been about a month or so, maybe a little longer. So I manage, we have 5 different Facebook groups that are within all the regions of the United States. Okay. We have a Northwest, Southeast, Midwest, Southwest, and then we have a military spouse one that's called Mill Spouse. And so I do all the posts for them and engagement and try and answer questions. We have IPs and surrogates in our groups, and we allow matching. So if they want to go independent and match through our groups, we're happy to assist in any way we can with whatever process they want to do. They don't have to join our agency to be part of our group.
And do they have offices in all these regions, or is it more of a virtual online kind of a organization?
Our office is in Atlanta, Georgia, but most agencies have just one office located somewhere. And then because you never have to go into the agency, everything's done, you know, via computer and email and all that stuff. And so the office location doesn't really matter. I actually get asked that question way more than I thought I would. I live in Texas. What surrogacy agency is in Texas? Well, it doesn't matter what state you're in. Find an agency that fits with you, that believes in the things that you do, that has, you know, the benefits that you're looking for. Every agency is a little different, that works with the doctor that you want. There's all sorts of different criteria.
And have you worked with any either intended parents or surrogates or maybe even egg donors? Some agencies also deal with egg donation. Mm-hmm. Have you worked with any that have had negative or bad or sad experiences?
Yeah. I mean, there are always some, there's a bunch of IPs in some of our groups now that have had, you know, they've matched and they've started contracts and then all of a sudden they get ghosted, or they find out that the surrogate wasn't truthful, or the IPs wanted more than, you know, the surrogate bargained for as far as communication or, you know, controlling things like that. So there are definitely negative experiences. I recommend an agency to everyone. Doesn't have to be my agency, it can be whatever agency you want, but they just help navigate the process. They are kind of like, especially when money's involved, you want someone, and a substantial amount of money, you want someone to be the go-between, you know, if things get messy or if during COVID your monitoring clinic shuts down right away. Well, now what do I do? This is where all my appointments were scheduled. Who takes my insurance? It's weird insurance. You know, that kind of thing. Agencies just really help a lot. And there is an added cost, but in my opinion, as a surrogate, it is worth it to have someone answer my million questions.
Yeah. I mean, I worked with one surrogate and, you know, she was doing an international surrogacy. And when they took the twins and left the United States, they didn't pay any of her medical bills. And her agency left her twisting in the wind and they said they couldn't help her.
Oh my gosh.
She had, you know, almost $11,000 of unpaid, you know, she ended up delivering prematurely, 10 weeks mm-hmm. premature with twins. So you can imagine the hospital bill that she had from that yep. delivery. And so I guess it's not just working with an agency, it's making sure that you're working with an agency that's going to advocate for you.
But yes, definitely do your research, 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 IPs and surrogates. Look, find the doctor that has a good reputation, read reviews, talk to people, join chats and forums and Facebook groups and get recommendations and hear real life experiences.
Would you be okay if the US adopted a model like Canada, which is only altruistic surrogacy? So surrogates can't, like organ donors can't be compensated?
Yep.
Or do you think that would just make business dry up?
You know, I don't know. I was talking about with this to someone like 2 weeks ago, because I actually didn't know that about Canada until a couple weeks ago. Personally, I wouldn't do it without the compensation because of the risk factor, because of the restraints it puts on my family during the surrogacy. You have travel restrictions, you know, during COVID, it's even worse. But I wouldn't do it without that reward that's directly benefiting my family. Yes, making a baby for someone else that's always wanted one is a huge reward. It definitely is. But that doesn't directly affect my children. I'm looking for something to affect my children, to make my family's life better and not just make me feel good. Of course, it makes me feel good, but I have a nice ego already. So I don't need just that. So I don't know, you know, and I never understood personally why I No, I take that back. I do understand why an egg donor can't, or not an egg donor, but an organ donor can't get paid, because all sorts of, you know, blackmail and that kind of thing would be going on, and people getting taken advantage of. And yes, I get that. But there's so many in America, there's so many weird things that you can get paid for. And then there's things that are, I feel, are very similar that you cannot get paid for. And I don't understand where they draw the line and who's drawing the line. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's really easy to draw the line with organ donation, because organ donation is giving the gift of life.
Yes. Organ donation. Yes.
You see, in surrogacy, you're giving the gift of life. You know, it's life in a new baby, or the life, and I'm saving your life because you now have a new kidney. But we don't let money, because of the abuse, is that. So anyway.
Right. And definitely for the abuse. Yes. You can. And the black market still takes over.
What do you think about, like the global South has basically shut down surrogacy because they've had so much exploitation. Women have died, egg donors have died, surrogates have died. Children that were born with disabilities have been left and abandoned because IPs didn't want them. Most of Europe doesn't allow surrogacy, which is why the Italian couple that are coming. Yep. I hear that Italy's getting ready to close their borders to make sure that Italians can't leave to do this, which makes me very happy, because to me, if they can't do it in their own country, I don't want them here harming women here. I mean, what do you think about those countries? Do you think they just got it wrong? Do you think?
I think they're just different. Especially now during COVID, there are more things that I see about other countries that I think are better than the way that we're doing things. I mean, you can see, just because of the COVID numbers, they're doing something right and we're not. So I think that they have a lot of models in European countries that do things very well. But I think they're just different. They were built on different ideals. Their governments are run different. They, you know, have different needs and wants for their specific country. It's just like two different families raising two different babies, and they just raise them differently. It doesn't mean one is bad and one is good. It's just different. But there are, you know, and with the same with those two families, you take a little bit from both family and you could have a happy community. So I just think it's different.
Well, our time is just about done. And I just have one last question. And it's just more if you have any comments about, you know, I've been really watching what's been going on in Ukraine with all of the babies that have been born through surrogacy that the IPs cannot come to because of the COVID travel bans. And I think they've had hundreds of babies born now that are basically being raised in hotels that have been turned into sort of large institutional nurseries. Do you have any thoughts on that situation?
There was a lot of cases like that in China when we first started to shut down. There were a lot of surrogates who had Chinese IPs, and some couldn't come right away when the baby was born. And I feel for all those families a lot, because you want that skin to skin contact when that baby is first born with their parents. Like, that's so important to me. And I'm sure to them, you know, like, this is something that they've spent a ton of money on, a ton of time, all their energy and emotion, and they don't get to be there for, you know, opening the present. So I do feel for them. As a surrogate, I think I would want to take that baby to my house until the parents could come. And I know that's been the experience for some surrogates. They've been able to do that, some not, some have done other things. But I just feel that until that baby gets to his parents, it's my responsibility to make sure that it's okay. And I'm okay with that.
I know I said that was my last question, but another one just popped in my mind. Then I'm gonna let you go. Because you got your kids and it's a summertime day, they want their mom. So because surrogates who come into contact with me, they find me. I don't go looking for them. But when something goes wrong, they go to the internet, because that's what we all do. We go to the internet to see who can help us or figure out something.
Yes.
And what they overwhelmingly tell me is that they've been in, you know, support groups, Facebook groups, chat group, whatever. And the minute something goes wrong, they get ghosted. They get kicked out of the group because they don't want to hear anything went wrong. They don't want to hear, have you heard that before? Has that been your experience? Why is, you know, and when Brooke Brown died, she was a Boise, Idaho surrogate that died, you know, the Suro sisters with the big heart started to GoFundMe to raise money for Brooke's family. So there's this tight Suro sister community, but mm-hmm. then when the surrogate gets into trouble, she gets kicked out.
What does she get in trouble for?
She had, you know, the IPs didn't pay her bills, or the IPs are treating her badly, or she's having pregnancy related complications.
That has not been my experience. I actually do my surrogacy through Circle Surrogacy. It's a different agency than I work for. And we have a group, it's got like 780 members in it. And there are, I mean, that's the best thing about the group is that you can talk it out. We had a girl who was having a really good pregnancy, and then all of a sudden, and everything was going good with her IPs. And then they decided that she wasn't going to get to see the baby. She wasn't going to see any pictures. She wasn't going to get to, they were just going to take the baby and go right into a different room. As soon as it was born, the mom was making all these crazy demands at the very end. And she turned to our Facebook group every week and updated us and said, this is what's happening. And, you know, that's what the Facebook groups are there for, is the support and to say, you know, it's going to be okay. Try this. Have you said this? And it's going to come down to the agency, which is, again, do your research, find an agency that's reputable. But in the end, you know, the agency did what they could to reach out to the mom and reason and try and figure it out. And it ended up being okay, not as great as she wanted, but okay. She ended up getting to see the baby one time. But yeah, that's what the groups are for. I mean, if you are in a group and you see people getting kicked out or removed because they're having a bad experience or something and they're trying to talk in the group about it, reconsider what you're doing. That should be a red flag.
Thank you for spending time with me today. I wish I would have convinced you to be on my side of the issue, but you know, I hope I gave you a few things to think about that maybe you hadn't thought about. But
you absolutely did, and I appreciate talking to you as well. It's always nice to hear another side. That's how we all continue in our conversations. So
how we all learn, and we don't have anything to fear.
Yes,
by hearing something different. So, all right. Well, listen. Thank you again for joining me here on Venus Rising.
Thank you. You have a great day, Jennifer.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.